You're listening to Outside the Cage with your hosts, Gabe Owens, Alan Young, and Brian Kilby.
Welcome to Outside the Cage. I am your host, the San Diego Center, Gabriel Owens. With me, as always, is the Memphis mobster, Alan Young, and the Carolina Crusher, Brian Kilby.
Was there a wrestler called the Carolina Crusher? I'm certain there was.
There should have been if there wasn't, or someone should take that name right now.
Yeah.
Because I had some better names worked up, but I forgot them, so that was right off the top of my head.
That's good.
So I've been gone for a couple weeks, timing and computer issues. We actually did a show. Me and Alan did a show about 2 weeks ago for the Strike Force card that
it didn't work.
It didn't record.
Sorry.
It was a good show. You guys should have heard it. It was pretty good.
Yeah. It was the best one we've done.
Yeah, lost forever. But the latest news is UFC 114, which is now about a week old today. We really should have got this up sooner, but I was there live in Vegas. I was Vegasing it up. It took me about 3 days to recover, and then my ship went underway for 2 days, so I'm pretty much getting back now. So
that's what happened.
What do you think of the show, Alan?
That's a good question. As I mentioned to you earlier, my memory is a little fuzzy of the card.
I take it you're drinking at the event?
Yes.
Wow. I will be running these down. I have like a report in front of me. I was really fuzzy at the event. I was really fuzzy for the whole weekend. I've been told a lot of things that I did that I'm not quite don't remember. Apparently, I told I was explaining BotCon to one of the big wigs over at Figure Four message board, who was really excited to go to BotCon, and apparently I dashed all his hopes for it being whatsoever cool.
You were texting me from like your hotel room at 3 o'clock in the morning while you're hanging out with Dave Meltzer.
That wasn't 3 a.m. for me. That I do remember. I did walk into this is me cheating on Ouija. I was hanging out with the Figure Four / Wrestling Observer message board.
Oh, okay.
We had steak. It was very good. Huh. I had my pro camera with me. Everyone was happy. They had some decent pictures that weren't off a cell phone. We decided to go. We had someone checked out a suite for the party. Like, really giant, even bigger than the one we did in 01 for BotCon. And, I walk in the room, and there's fucking Dave Meltzer watching SmackDown with, a bunch of wrestling MMA geeks. I'm like, this is surreal. This is so surreal. I got to call people. Who would care? So I called Kevin, who did answer. I called Brian, who left his phone at work. Brian's lame.
Yeah.
And I think I texted Robo Robin Hoop.
And not me.
You wouldn't know. I guess you're vaguely aware who Dave Meltzer is, but I don't think you really know Dave, do you?
No.
So,
other than who does Figure Four stuff.
Figure Four is Brian Alvarez. He does wrestling. He's been covering wrestling since the 70s and MMA since it started. So it's kind of a big deal.
Okay.
Anyway, it was kind of surreal being in the same room with a guy. And then just watching wrestling and having beers. And then someone broke out the Crown Royal and that's kind of the last I remember. But I woke up in my hotel room. I literally thought, okay, whose hotel room did I crash in last night? Because no way I made it back. Oh, wait, this is my... I looked at, literature in the room. I'm at the circus. Oh, wait, I am in my room.
You must have had someone walk you there like I've done before.
It had to have been. No, I think someone said that I got in a cab and left. But, yeah. It's very fuzzy.
Okay. Anyway, my memories may actually be slightly sharper than yours.
Well, that was the night before the fights. I do remember.
Oh, okay.
After the fights, most of it. I know. I almost got any. I almost did not get let in my room by a security guard. For something I don't remember what. But I distinctly remember having a very stern conversation with a security guard outside my hotel room at about 4 a.m. Probably best I don't remember what that was about.
Something about cancer of the knee, perhaps.
Perhaps. But I just remember his face. He was not happy with me whatsoever.
Well, that's, you tend to have that effect on people when you've had a few drinks.
I guess so. But anyway, yes, I did go to the live card. I had some technical issues, and I ended up missing the first fight. Ryan Jensen versus Jesse Forbes. Apparently, Jensen won by guillotine. Okay. I walked in on... Yep, apparently I walked in on the Rogan interview of that. The Brammer versus Rally fight. Yeah, it was okay. It was it was full three rounds. They were on the feet, they were on the ground. It was about an B-level show era fight. Riley won 30-27. He dominated pretty much the whole fight, standing in on the ground. Did they show this live? Or on the... Do you remember?
No. I don't think they showed that one.
They showed the Cyril Diabate-Louis Cain fight, didn't they?
Yes.
Diabate was the long, lanky black guy. Louis Cain, you know who Louis Cain is. Diabate had a couple fights in Pride before it closed. I remember him. He was an ex-kickboxer. Yeah, it was a stand-up war. Diabate got the knockout. It was a fun fight for what it lasted. It was about one round. Yeah, I think both of us are still... It's been too long since the fight, and we're both kind of fuzzy tonight, so we'll list it highlights then. You remember the Melvin Gillard fight?
No. I vaguely remember seeing it. Apparently, Melvin Gillard defeated Waylon Lowe via TKO strikes round one, 3 minutes and 28 seconds.
Way to read the results there, buddy. Yes, that's exactly what happened. Melvin Gillard's been around since, I think, Ultimate Fighter 2. Some guy we've always said, you know, a lot of athletic potential, really, really shitty jiu-jitsu. He's a guy who's bouncing around, getting great strikes, trying to get takedowns, and someone always seems to catch him in an armbar or a guillotine choke.
Likes to go snowing in the Alps, skiing in the Alps, whatever the phrase is.
Nose first.
Right.
I guess he's cleaned up his act. They keep giving him chances, so, I mean, obviously, yep. You see a lot in the guy, and he does. The guy's athletic as shit.
He's a really exciting, explosive fighter, so, you know, even if his record is pretty uneven, he's one of the guys that gets fights just because, you know, he puts on exciting fights.
He had a good fight here. He's training with Greg Jackson's camp, which I guess 90% of the UFC fighters in the year will be training at Greg Jackson's. It's going to make it hard to create fights. But then they said the same thing about Pat Miletic a few years ago, and then his camp completely went to shit, so what can he do?
Right.
This was a card of mostly decisions. Those are most of the finishes of the fight. The next fight was Dan Luozan versus Efrain Escudero. Another decision. It was okay. I think more people are it's more interesting. You know, Dan and his brother. You know, I think we talked about it last show. We're kind of fighting right now.
Right.
And said Dan doesn't train hard enough. I think the fight, pretty obviously he doesn't.
Right.
Train beat him pretty handily. You know, 29-27 across the board. He lost. He got docked a point in the third round for a groin shot. It kind of looked weird to me. Did they show this? Did they show this fight?
Yes. I'm pretty sure this one got shown.
You remember the groin? I mean, it was like he hit him once in the groin, and then all of a sudden it was docked a point, no warning. It was kind of...
Right, I vaguely remember that.
kind of out of nowhere. It was just like, okay. And someone said, like, oh, he got warned in the first round for something similar, which I don't recall at all, but okay. Didn't affect the outcome. He still won.
Right.
And we had fan favorite Ultimate Fighter 7 winner Amir Sadala versus Dong Hyun Kim.
Yes, I do remember this fight.
What?
I do remember this fight fairly clearly. It was basically Dong going all over Amir for three years.
He exploded all over Amir. That's true.
That's right. Just held him down, didn't let him up, basically.
The Dong applied pressure to the Amir. It's true. Yeah, he uses wrestling. Amir just couldn't do a goddamn thing from his back.
Right.
Kim got tired, still kept managing to get the takedowns. Amir was trying to punch from the top. Didn't work. Kim won 30-27. It was a good fight. I liked it. I was cheering for Amir. I like Amir. I think he's got a great personality. It's a fun style. He is very, very green in the sport, though. So.
Right. He won. Did he have any professional fights at all going into the Ultimate Fight?
He was 0-0 going into the Ultimate Finale and still won.
Right. So that's...
He had like 6 amateur fights. And depending on the state, the only difference between amateur fight and a pro fight is they don't pay you. Which is why a lot of people are trying to get amateur MMA regulated right now. Is a lot of these promoters use that stipulation, this is an amateur fight, because they don't want to pay people. So,
right.
He had 6 amateur fights. He was, a nurse or something?
I don't recall.
Something very unmanly, like his day job in MMA. It was like, you know, Marcus Jones is a, you know, plants flowers, Amir Sadala is a nurse, both kick ass at night. And we got to the main card. We had Diego Sanchez and John Hathaway. Sanchez moved up to, what was this, 170, 185?
170, yeah. Back to welterweight.
Yeah, it didn't look good.
No. I was wondering if he was still underweight from having had a couple of fights at lightweight.
He had a couple of years at lightweight. He challenged for the title.
Well, yeah. I mean, it wasn't that long. It was just 2 or 3 fights at lightweight, wasn't it?
It was about 4 or 5, I think, in that realm. But, yeah, he'd been down there for a while. And of course, he won Ultimate Fighter 1 at 185, but then immediately dropped to 170 afterwards. He pretty much came on the show at 185 just to be on the show. He wasn't, at the time, a natural 170-er.
Right.
Started getting dominated by the bigger wrestlers at 170, moved down to 155 where he thought he could dominate. And he did okay, but, you know, he ran into BJ Penn, and other than a few human beings, it's kind of hard to overcome BJ Penn. But, yeah, he didn't. He got his lunch eaten this whole fight. I think it was a bit of an upset. John Hathaway is not very well known compared to Diego. Mm-hmm. And he just kind of took him apart for 3 rounds. I mean, Diego did his thing. You know, he kept trying, but, you know, he just had no answer for Mr. Hathaway.
If I'm not mistaken, Dana said in the press conference that he thought that Diego needed to go back to 155.
I agree. He didn't look good there.
Yeah. He needs to do something, definitely, whether it's bulk up to sustain 170 or drop back to 155.
It's his problem. And at 170, he is just... You know, he gets any of these really big dudes at 170. He has no idea how to deal with people who have thighs on him. You know, he's completely, you know, we saw that with the Fitch fight, you know. And, you know, it's not like he didn't try. He went out there his best to beat up Fitch, and he sucked. It's kind of what prompted him to go to 155, where, you know, he could be the bully. And but speaking of underdogs, we had Antonio Hujero Nogueira, the younger brother of Minotauro, younger by 2 minutes. They are twins. Versus Jason Brills, a complete nobody.
Right.
that ended up being a way better fight than it should have been. A fight that many thought Brills won.
I agreed with that. I thought that the decision was terrible. I thought the first two rounds clearly went to Brills, and the third round was close.
I would challenge the first round being clearly. That was pretty back and forth. Second round was definitely Brills.
Yeah.
Third round was I thought was pretty much Nogueira's round.
Okay.
I think it would come down to the first round. Like you said, you saw clearly Brills winning. I didn't. I saw it back and forth. Could have gone either way. So I'm not really upset with the decision. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter win or lose. Brills kind of had the rocky story, came in and fought the big name. You know, a lot of people thought he should have won. You know, he took the guy to that kind of limit.
Right.
You know, his guy got himself a job.
Yeah, his stock went up after this fight. Because he was such a massive underdog and, you know, in many people's eyes, won the fight despite the decision, despite the judge's ruling. So we're going to be hearing more from Brills in the future.
No doubt. He's, that's the first time this has happened with Nogueira. Back in Pride, he was a 12-1 favorite over a then completely unknown Sokaju. And if you recall, Sokaju knocked him out in the first round.
Right. Back when Sokaju was interesting, when it looked like he could be somebody.
Yeah, and he beat Arona the next fight on Pride, and then just never did anything else. I think he was in the UFC for 4 fights. He was 1-3, I believe.
Something like that. He just couldn't perform that well in the UFC.
Yeah, and a lot of people have these problems.
Yeah.
And we had a Mike Russo versus Todd Duffy. I think I was on a bathroom break for this fight.
That was definitely an interesting fight. And a little fuzzy, as I mentioned, Russo was the guy who looked physically unimpressive, looked about 10, 15 pounds overweight in the belly. And was losing it, and
what I remember was he was getting hit by a lot of big shots, and he just kept taking them.
Right.
But it was just an interesting fight. The crowd booed it. I don't know why. It wasn't like a particularly bad fight, but I don't know if it came across on TV, but the crowd there in the building was just not having this fight for whatever reason. And then it kind of made a weird dynamic.
And in the third round, Russo hit Duffy with a right and KTFO put him to sleep. So it was a really impressive come-from-behind victory for Russo.
Rogan called it the greatest come-from-behind knockout in the history of the sport. Not true. Scott Smith has done it at least 3 times over in Strikeforce. But it was still a good come from behind. I think I walked in on the couple minutes before that happened. So I wasn't really into the storyline of the fight. I really hadn't seen. I ended up reading about it later.
Right.
I was like, oh, there's 2 big dudes slugging it out. Okay. Oh, they got to knock that guy out. Like, oh, Todd Duffy. I didn't know that name. That was kind of the end of my interest in that fight.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had Michael Bisping versus Dan Miller. Oh, this is the brother I was talking about. Never mind. I think. Anyway. This fight is pretty much what I expected. A lot of stand-up, a lot of hits. Miller, I knew Miller couldn't keep up with Bisping's boxing. He did not, but he stayed in there. He stayed alive. Bisping didn't try any of the wrestling he's apparently learned lately and been trying to implement. But and they kept it a pretty much a stand-up fight. I enjoyed it. Bisping not booed as badly as I expected. He's starting to gain some of his fans back from the U.S. versus U.K. show, which he became kind of a bad heel in the States. Mm-hmm. I think people are starting to forgive him for it. But I thought it was a pretty fun fight.
I will have to take your word on that, because I honestly don't really remember that fight at all.
Wow. Really deep into the drinks at that point, huh?
Mm-hmm.
As was I, but I was live, so I had more adrenaline coming through me. But then we got to the main event. It's what we all came here for. It's a year of build-up. Two dudes just do not like each other. One calls the other one fake. The other one calls the other one a minstrel. There was a lot of racial tension played up in this feud. UFC actually played it down. They were not interested in bringing out the race card.
Right.
But I thought it was a very interesting dynamic, very similar to the Ali Frazier feud from the 70s. You know, I thought, you know, there was a lot of interesting dynamics here. You also had Quentin Jackson, who's been out for 18 months. Hard as he can train 18 months without fighting and getting really fucking fat on a movie set. Probably not going to do any good against a guy the caliber of Rashad.
Right.
We saw a countdown show. Rashad is doing, you know, state of the art. You know, it was basically Rocky IV. Rashad was doing stuff.
So awesome.
Yeah, he was doing all the scientific measurements and countermeasures, and Rashad was basically training in a cold gym with about 4 weights in the UK.
21 pounds per square inch. Oh my God, he's not human.
This is what the countdown looked like. But unfortunately, the outcome was the exact opposite. But yeah, Rashad was doing. They even called him out on it. The trainer, Rashad's trainers in the countdown were saying, like, I watched these shows and Rampage is doing the stuff we were doing 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not training like a champion should be training. We may see that change. I think Rampage may look at this and, you know, think the same thing, but we'll see once he gets off.
His, you know, Rampage's heart seems to be in and out of it. So,
His heart was into this. He just, his body wasn't ready for it, I think.
Yeah. He at least gave the impression that he was ready. He really wanted to do this. He wanted to win this fight. But
he wanted to beat Rashad. That wasn't any kind of, you know, hype or, you know, I'm here for a paycheck. He really doesn't like the guy, and, you know, but unfortunately you can want it as much as you want to and you can train as hard as you want to, but if you're coming in that late to train with that much time off.
Yeah, it's tough at best. And yeah, as you said, his based on what they showed on the countdown, his training regimen just didn't seem impressive compared to Rashad's.
As I said, Rashad was doing the Rocky IV thing, and we've seen that with all the Greg Jackson guys. They are very scientific. They've got a kind of a, you know, they're running with parachutes, you know.
Right.
Really build that, you know, explosiveness in wrestling. And, you know, Rashad did not go in there to have a slugfest. You know, all the crap that might have been talked, he was not going to go there and have a fight. He was going in there to score points and win an MMA match. And that's exactly what he did. He played his game plan to perfection.
Yeah.
Rampage had no answer. He managed to keep him up on the feet most of the time. When he did get taken down, he wasn't down very long. It makes me think, you know, a Rampage, you know, top of his game would be, you know, may have more success, but in this fight, he looked slower. He looked unable to keep up. He did get a knockdown in the third round. Couldn't finish. Clive, the place was going crazy, wanting him to finish. For a second, I thought he would, but Rashad got back up. I was like, ah, it's over. But, you know, being a Memphis boy, I was a little not surprised, but still disappointed at the same time.
Yeah, I was somehow expecting Rampage to pull this one out, and he didn't, and I was disappointed.
they still will rematch at some point. They can rebuild it. You know, and then Rampage, even funnier, kind of went on a rant against, the movie industry, how much he hated being on the set of the A-Team, how much he hated Hollywood, to the point Dana actually had to pull him aside and say, dude, you can't talk shit about these people, they will sue you.
Was that in the post-fight interview or what? Because I don't remember that.
No, that was the press conference.
It's press conference. Okay.
Whether or not, that was Rampage in the moment, If the A-Team does well and he makes ridiculous money off of the movie, I guarantee you he'll change his mind.
Dana tweeted a day or two ago saying that he saw the A-Team and he thought that Rampage killed it.
Everyone I've heard of seen it said he did the perfect job for that role. Yeah. Whether or not he's like a future in Hollywood, a different story.
Right.
He just continues to play B.A. Brackus in the A-Team.
Which is a distinct possibility of the movie does well, that there will be a series of sequels.
I doubt it.
That's a big franchise. If you make another franchise, hey, come on, they made a franchise out of a friggin' plastic toys cartoon from the 80s, dude. You're saying the A-Team can't work?
I doubt it.
Wow. But speaking of, everyone this Monday, I probably never watched a full episode of Raw in probably going on a year and a half, but I will be watching tomorrow, or 2 days from now, which God knows when this will air, but this Monday, which probably, if you're listening to this, it's already aired, but this Monday, the stars of the A-Team will be on Raw, which include
Liam Neeson on Raw.
What?
Liam Neeson on Raw would be hard to... Are you talking about the new cast?
The new cast.
You know, George Pappard's dead, so he's not going to show up on Raw.
No. The new cast, including Quentin Rampage Jackson, the UFC star, will be on WWE television.
That includes Liam Neeson, though.
It does include Liam Neeson.
I mean, Liam Neeson's going to be on Raw. I don't know. I tend to think of Liam Neeson as, a fairly high-caliber actor, and seeing it on a wrestling show is kind of ironic.
He saved his shoes.
This is how funny, UFC and WWE, whether they wanted to admit it or not, are kind of in competition with each other. And because of this movie promo, you've got... he's like a minor UFC guy. Like, he's one of their bigger draws.
Right.
It's going to be, hosting Raw. Quentin grew up a big wrestling fan. In fact, his whole shtick is basically Junkyard Dog.
Whitey.
Yeah. In fact, everyone's kind of waiting to see what happens because he told the story for years. He was trying to get into wrestling and he met The Undertaker, and The Undertaker basically told him to go fuck off. And The Undertaker will be at the show, so there will be people backstage with bated breath for their meeting. But Quentin could be very fun on the show. Quentin's got, Quentin has more charisma in his pinky than probably about half the WWE roster right now. Barring the top guys, Quentin's just that good, I think. And then most of the WWE are big fans of UFC at this point anyway, but in terms of what Quentin shows up, Quentin seems to be in a very, he just lost a fight. He's in a very bad mood over this, having to promo this movie. He'll probably be in a bad mood until he starts getting the box office receipts. See how much money he's making. And then he'll realize, wow, dealing with sitting in a trailer for hours on end is worth it. And I'm making tens of millions of dollars instead of having to get my ass kicked for $1 million. But we will see. Before we get into Ultimate Fighter, any other news you wanted to touch on, Alan?
Oh, let's see. We just saw the episode that dealt with Tito departing the show. Apparently, neck injury is bothering him, so he pulled out of the fight with Chuck Liddell. That was the mysterious reason that that fight was off. Of course, we've known it was off for a while. So Dana, you know, surprised the guys, the Team Ortiz, by bringing in Rich Franklin. And they're teasing the audience by saying that there's also a second coach who is a former champion. And, you know, tune in next week to find out who this is. And if it's not Matt Hughes, I will eat my underwear.
It's always Matt Hughes. Come on now.
I mean, especially paired with Rich Franklin.
Yeah, yeah. It's not going to be BJ Penn. That would just be weird.
Yeah, yeah. So, anyway.
Yeah, that's, I remember. It was funny. Like I said, Chuck Liddell's shown so much more personality in the season than he's shown in the last 10 years I've watched him.
Well,
He really, really, really hates Tito.
Yeah, I was going to say it's a combination of Tito and editing.
Yeah. Well, he's done some good. He's done the good one-liners. Was it his last episode? The kind of the black sideshow Bob of the show, talking trash. I think even his own friend called him a dirty Q-tip, which I thought was pretty good. He came in there. He fought this really short wrestler. He was throwing a bunch of wacky kicks, punches. He got tagged. Once he started getting tagged himself by this guy who he probably thought wasn't going to be able to hit him, you know, his confidence started shaking. He squeaked out the first round. Obviously, the judges agreed. Second round, he lost badly.
Yeah, and then he just gave up.
Yeah, the little blue guy just beat the crap out of him, knocking down times. He quit on the stool, basically. He just
didn't answer the bell for the third round.
Everyone even said, like, that's the most pussy way to get out of a fight. Like, even getting submitted or getting knocked out is better than, you know, just refusing to answer the bell.
Yeah.
So, he looked bad here. At this point, Dana fired him, brought in Rich. We got a bunch of weird drama.
Fired Tito.
So, yeah. The episode before we saw Chuck, we saw the episode we went for, Chuck loses his mind, which is over a kick. Guy did a pride style soccer kick to a guy's face.
Right.
Got disqualified because the guy couldn't answer the bell.
Yeah, they showed the replay two or three times, and it was pretty clear that he was kicked in the face and knocked out in the face.
Yeah, like he felt like he got kicked in the face and he fell flat straight back down to the ground. You know,
right.
You don't do that. That you can't fake that. The dude was knocked out, and he couldn't really recover. Tito and his trainer started saying it was bullshit. It was a kick to the armpit. Yes.
Right. And
Chuck lost his mind. Fantastic. I always say, like, if there's ever a boring fight and Chuck Liddell is there, the trick is to watch Chuck Liddell watch the fight instead of the actual fight, because he's way more entertaining. Because all Chuck does when watching a fight is, like, act out, like, what the guy should be doing, whoever he picks to win, and he'll start just, like, shadow boxing wherever he's at. So some of these fights I would rather just watch Chuck. Anyway, this season hasn't been much of anything. You know, it was a bait and switch. You know, I'm still glad that at the end of the day we're getting Rich Franklin and Chuck Liddell, interesting fight.
Okay. Which is next weekend, by the way. Which I'm surprised they're showing that pay per view before the finale of the show airs, but they're doing it that way.
Scheduling. So. That's how some scheduling goes sometimes. I will be gone. Actually, I've been meaning to ask you. Might as well ask you here on air if you can record the UFCs for me, or at least find a means to get them, if you know what I mean, and send them to me in a playable DVD format.
I think I can do that. Are you going to have a laptop?
I have my laptop. I would prefer it if I could play it on a DVD, but if you can't convert it, that's fine. I'll just play it on my laptop.
Are you out to see?
Yes.
So is it safe to say that we won't be recording outside the cage while you're at sea?
No, it depends. We'll be doing a lot of humanitarian work in South America, so I will be in the port a lot, just not in San Diego.
Uh-huh.
If I get a hotel with Wi-Fi, like one random night, I can definitely record.
Okay.
So I will not be out of touch.
I see. That's good to know.
But offline, I will give you my address, and I would appreciate that.
Sure.
And anything else? Any other news you've heard? Going back to Strike Force, Overeem did pass his drug test, so.
That's good.
Yeah, he cleaned himself out pretty good before he got to St. Louis. Or allegedly. Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Just real quick. Yeah, Overeem won. He beat Brett Rogers pretty badly. It was obvious Brett Rogers got lucky with Andre Lasky. He does not belong anywhere near the upper echelon of heavyweight fighters, I think.
Speaking of Overeem, was it during that fight that, I may be misremembering, but I want to say that Mauro Ranallo made a crack about the horse population dropping when...
It sounds like a moral line. I wouldn't doubt it. Here's something Brian would appreciate. The entire card, Mauro dropped two Ric Flair references and a John Cena reference.
Wow.
Yeah, Mauro Ranallo used to be a pro wrestler announcer before he went MMA. So, but he was on that night. It was a very fun card. You know, I wish our show had recorded because.
Sorry,
but yeah, your system sucks. We hate you. Hope you die.
You have knee cancer.
Yeah,
have cancer from the knee.
But yeah, no, I didn't catch that line about the horses, but yeah, it sounds like Mauro. I like Mauro a lot. He's sometimes annoying, but other times he'll just drop a line that's so funny. Like, no, what are you going to do? He'll laugh.
And I could be misremembering where I heard that, but I remember it was someplace surprising.
More. Anyway. Well, if it had been horses, he would have been busted because that stuff stays in your system like 2 years. So you would have to be a moron like Stefan Bonner to take horse steroids. Was it called Boulderlinone or something? Boulderlinone?
But I do not know.
Yeah. It's not a good one to take. That's what I've heard. But anything else going on? Any pro wrestling news, Brian, you want to talk about?
Not really. Nothing that I can think of.
All right. Well, I said we got Raw, like MMA pro wrestling crossover in 2 days. Another UFC next weekend. We have... What else is going on? Yes, even though I'll be gone, I will be trying to set up a... I will be trying to do a vintage pro wrestling show. Myself, Brian, probably Robo Rob, John DeLuna, called, unless it's copyrighted already, Still Real to Me.
Yeah, I really want to do this. I'm really excited by this. When do we want to start that?
We started this week before I leave. I'd like that. But I said Virgil has reared his ugly head, so I must address this. The fact this guy ever has a job ever just, you know, amazes me. And we must discuss the history of Virgil. So, that's all we got this week. We will talk to you next time. Oh, Alan?
Oh, one more thing I wanted to mention is that if you go to... I've got it bookmarked here. If you go to... AmpEnergy.com/WEC, you can vote for the location of the December WEC event, and I would appreciate if all our listeners would vote for Nashville repeatedly.
Yes, vote for Nashville.
Vote for Nashville. That's,
is San Diego on there?
I don't care. That's AmpEnergy.com/WEC. Nashville.
We'll just stick with Nashville. I'll give Alan that one. Vote for Nashville. WC Amp Energy. It's not the same contest where like you can win a chance to have like Uriah Faber kick your ass, right?
I think that's...
That one over with?
I'm not sure.
I never saw the appeal of that commercial. It was like, yeah, win a chance to, you know, train and roll with your RF Aber. I'm like, wow, I get to get my ass beat by a very short man that looks like Kerry Von Erich. No thanks.
Is he missing a foot?
No, he has both his feet, but he does look... Google a photo of Uriah Faber. He does look shockingly like Kerry Von Erich, with a more pronounced butt chin. But I think that will be it for the week. We'll see you next time, either here on Outside the Cage, or check us out on our new show for you wrestling fans. Still real to me. Bye. Dun, 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 dun. Outro music, outro music.
You've been listening to Outside the Cage with your hosts, Gabe Owens, Alan Young, and Brian Kilby. Outside the Cage is a Radio Free Cybertron production. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Copyright 2010, Radio Free Cybertron.